This episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and use the offer code WarRocketAjax to get $3 off a brand new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Is that War Rocket Ajax to bring back his body?
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax, brought to you by the Life Leave Me Alone podcast this week. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and I'm back, everybody. Thank you for listening to episode 300 and then skipping the week that we skipped, right? We skipped a week, Matt. Like, you wouldn't do the show without me, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, of course. No, I listened to the show. It was great. Shout out to Kurt Franklin and Chris Haley for filling in last week. But I'm back from vacation, and I'm Chris Sims. And with me, as always, my co-host on the show, Mr. Matt Wilson. How are you?
I am doing just fine, Chris. I hope you're rested.
I am not. I am the opposite of rested.
Well, then you vacationed incorrectly, even though I think that's how most people do vacation. You run yourself ragged. But I'm sure we'll be hearing about everything that happened on your trip.
Yes, we have a segment of the show entirely built around that purpose.
Let's just get into the show. We're going to be doing some panel president lists this week because we got a lot that we want to add to the panel president master list, which I need to update. But before we get into those things and our normal segments, let's talk a little bit about our listener sponsor, which is the Life Leave Me Alone podcast. Yes, it is back. It went away for a little while, but Life Leave Me Alone, a podcast by Matt Fisher and James Goodson, the same fellows who made our snack situation theme for Movie Fighters.
And the health situation theme. Don't forget about that one.
That's right. They are back with their podcast, which they've been doing for quite a long time. The way that the podcast was structured before was kind of a comics and pop culture interview podcast. And now they've got it a little more regimented, where they're talking about music, wrestling, and comics-related media, not just comics, but movies and stuff. They did a long stretch in the Zero episode, I guess they were calling it 2.0, where they talked about Batman versus Superman, which we haven't really talked about on this show because I don't think either one of us has seen it, Chris. But they talk about that movie for quite a while, and it's really enjoyable to listen to them talk to it. I think that their opinions are probably similar to what mine would have been. So you should go listen to that episode. Their newest episode, which is episode 2.1, they talk about WrestleMania, kind of review it a little bit. They talk about some comic stuff. They talk about some cool bands that folks should listen to. So there's a lot of like recommending. There's a lot of just discussing stuff that's going on in those three arenas. And each one of those segments is introduced by a jingle that they wrote and recorded, much like our snack situation theme. So you get to listen to some cool little music that they made as well.
On a personal level, I just want to give a genuine shout out to these guys. They are super nice dudes. We've hung out with them in person. In addition to being on their show, I was on the show back in the first iteration of Life Leave Me Alone. But Matt, at least, manages to make it up to Heroes Con, where they will have a table this year if you're planning on going to Heroes. He is one of the nicest guys around, a super cool dude, a super great dude to talk to and listen to. So I am so glad to have this podcast back. It is one that I personally enjoyed in its previous iteration, and I am looking forward to enjoying now that it's back.
And I think I maybe made it sound like they're not going to be doing interviews anymore. That is not the case. They are still going to be doing interview segments, even though the two episodes that are up right now are just the hosts, Matt and James, talking. But they are going to be doing interview segments. And what they're going to be doing is getting professionals from one area that they talk about to talk about one of the other two areas. So they'll get someone in the music industry to talk about wrestling, or they'll get a wrestler to talk about comics, or they'll get a comics creator to talk about their favorite music, which is really cool. It's something we've tried to do on War Rocket Ajax a lot, kind of get out of the comfort zone of comics and talk about other stuff with our guests. And that's what they do on Life Leave Me Alone now, which sounds great. I can't wait till they do some interviews. So go listen to that show, everybody. One more item of business that we need to take care of before we get to other stuff. We should thank our newest supporters on Patreon.
What? Matt, are you talking about the people who give us money directly?
That's
people
right.
who chip in a couple dollars every month at patreon.com/warrocketajax to help us keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks that keep sending in the mail called bills?
That's right, Chris. Here are our newest supporters. Tim Gannon.
Thank you, Tim. Stop kidnapping princesses.
Yeah, take it easy on Link. And Jason Song Quinn.
Thank you, Jason.
Those are our newest supporters on Patreon. If you would like to help us out on Patreon, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/warrocketajax, chip in a few bucks. I just sent out brand new t-shirts to our supporters at the t-shirt level. They are super cool. Other supporters get audio that nobody else gets, ad-free episodes of the show, lots of other cool stuff. So go check all that stuff out. Chris, we've done some business. Now let's get down to doing some checks and recs.
Let's do it.
All right, Chris, I want to hear all about your vacation.
Oh, Matt, it was awesome. I took a little working vacation out to Portland, Oregon last week. That's why I wasn't on the show. You know, we were thinking about moving out there. So this was originally going to be a check things out trip, maybe look around, see what apartments are going for, you know, see what groceries are and the cost of living in Portland. But, you know, plans changed a little bit. So instead, we just kind of got to have a nice week in Portland hanging out with everybody and working and seeing people and touching base with folks that we haven't seen in a long time. So it was a blast. We ate a lot of food. Oh, my God. I gotta say, if you're like me, when I go on vacation, I don't like to do things. it's fine. I like to go places. I like to see things, but I don't really like doing traditionally touristy things until after I've done them. I like having done them. Like, I like having, you know, been to Washington, D.C. and seeing the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument and all that. But I don't like the actual act of doing them. What I really enjoy on a vacation is eating. I like eating food that I cannot eat where I live. And that is mainly what we did. And Portland has an amazing, amazing restaurant scene. We ate at a place called Beast, which is the chef was on, I believe, MasterChef or Top Chef, one of those two. That was amazing. We went to this place called Ox. All of these cool one-name restaurants. We went to a fast food place called Burgerville, which is, it's a fast food place, but all of their ingredients are locally sourced, so their milkshakes are seasonal. So we had fresh strawberry milkshakes. That was awesome. Drank a lot of coffee, a lot of really, really good coffee. Got to see a lot of people that I don't usually get to see. Got to grab coffee with Greg Rucka. I had breakfast with Jeff Parker. Just a lot of really, really fun people. I got to see Laura Hudson for the first time in a long time. Probably since like San Diego a couple years ago. And we got to hang out and play some pinball together. So that was really cool. Like I said, it was exhausting. We were there for 6 days. And so, of course, we finally adjusted to West Coast time on about day five. So the first few days we were there, Aiden and I were getting up at like 5:50 in the morning. You know, I slept really late and got up at like 8:30 one time. Like, other than that, we just saw a lot of people. And I guess the person that I should really give a shout out to for, you know, driving me around and hanging out with me and even cutting a little video with me where we talk about X-Men comics on their porch is Jay Edidin. Jay and Miles being really good friends of mine. Jay especially is someone that I've known for, you know, 4 or 5 years now, and we're pretty close. So seeing Jay was amazing. And, you know, getting to, like, since I wasn't on this show, I literally, on Thursday night, like, felt guilty about not being on the show, and I thought about calling you and having you patch me in. But instead, on over the weekend, I just sat outside on Jay's porch because Jay and Miles have cats, And so we sat on the back porch and I answered Twitter questions about the X-Men for a while. And that was super fun. Thanks, Portland, for a really, really fun trip. I'm super glad I got to go out. And hopefully I will come back out for another visit soon. It won't be another 2 years this time.
I have one question, Chris.
Yes, please.
My question is about the mani-pedi that you got.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, I totally got a mani-pedi.
How was that?
Fucking rad, dude. You know what? This can go ahead and be my rec. Because I thought, like, I didn't really have a rec this week because all I did was eat and read comics. So I can't really recommend, like, hey, by the way, if you're in Portland, go to this place called Slappy Cakes. They bring you a squeeze bottle full of batter and you make your own pancakes at a griddle that's set in your table. That doesn't really apply to most people. But I can tell you, go get a fucking mani-pedi. It's the bomb. We paid for the deluxe package, Matt. We go in, and I've never gotten one before. And it's honestly, it's not like that's for women sort of thing. It's that, like, generally speaking, I do not like to be touched by strangers.
this is one of my things about that sort of thing. But we'll get to that in a second.
I don't like massages for the same way. I get very tense.
Let me tell you something. At my old job in Chicago. We didn't get a lot of perks, but for whatever weird reason, our eccentric boss hired a masseuse to come in once a week and just, like, you could sign up on a sheet and she would give you a massage for 10 or 15 minutes and, like, work your back into working order, right? Mm-hmm. And I never did it because I was just like, oh, no, I don't know. So I'm weird about that kind of stuff. So I'm glad to hear that you and I share that and this went well for you.
I feel like a pedicure is the exact amount of my body I am willing to let a stranger touch. And I feel like a lot of that comes from the fact that I'm very proud of my calves. They are my best feature. So if I, you know, like calves, yes, do not touch my back. It's don't touch my torso. My torso is a bad situation. For everyone involved, they've got the little mini foot jacuzzi for your feet. That's pretty great. The first thing they do is bring you over a list of drinks that includes wine. Now, Matt, it was 10:30 in the morning. So I just got a coffee. I just got a Vietnamese coffee, which, by the way, was delicious. They went deluxe on it. Apparently, according to Aiden, I was very charming. To my nail tech, because I was like, oh, I'm sorry, it's my first time getting a pedicure. I don't know what to do. So there had to be some very clear instructions on where my feet were meant to go. They took, like, a microplaner to my foot, which is great because I know I have hella dead skin down there, and you get, like, and I can see the bottom of that thing. And I was like, wow, my feet are super gross. Thank you for touching them. I didn't get any nail color. Not really what I was in the market for, but I did get like a full on, like, two kinds of nice exfoliating scrub on like knee to toes, and then my legs wrapped in hot towels, and that was the bomb. That was great.
All right, here's my big question for you, Chris. The thing that has always put me off about nail salons, in addition to the touching thing,
yes,
is the smell. Overwhelms me. Mm-hmm. I can't walk into a nail salon because I smell that nail polish and it, like, it makes me nauseous.
Right, because it's got that, like, acetone smell, right?
There's something about it that I cannot take. I'm very sensitive to smells already, kind of. Like, perfume gets me. But, like, that nail salon smell, I cannot stay around it. So, was there an overpowering smell, or would it be possible for me to go get one of these and not have to deal with that nauseating smell that so many nail salons have?
All right. I'm going to say the salon that we went to did not have that smell.
Like, okay.
Like, I know the smell that you're talking about because there is a restaurant here in the town where I live that I quite enjoy eating at, and they are right next to a nail salon, and occasionally, if you're sitting over by the far wall, you'll get that smell mix in with your food.
Oh, boy. That sounds like a nightmare.
It's bad. But this place, I did not notice the smell. Now, that might be because it was 10:30 a.m. on a Monday morning. And so it was me, Aiden, and then like one other person getting their nails did. So maybe if it's busier, it would be there. But I did not notice it. I will tell you what we did is we looked for the highest rated nail salon. And that, like, we Yelped it and went to that one. Now, I am getting instant messages from Aiden, who can hear me talking from the next room. And she says that they did do the gel nails at the place we went to, but they were properly ventilated. So if you go to a place that's properly ventilated, you won't have to deal with that smell. She adds, the place next to the Chinese restaurant is just horrible. So,
okay.
Which, look, legit.
I'm glad to have that information from Aiden, and I will use it appropriately.
I forgot to tell you. I didn't tell you about my encounter at the airport. I told you. I texted you, obviously. I didn't tell the listeners about my encounter at the airport.
Yeah, this is, okay, a bonus check.
Yeah, this is important. So I'm at the airport on Tuesday waiting to fly back. I'm at PDX. We had some time to kill. We got there a little bit early. So, you know, the PDX airport, by the way, best airport. Even though they got rid of the great carpet and replaced it with this terrible new carpet, still a great airport. And I'll tell you why. Airport policy, you cannot inflate prices within the airport. So if you go to a shop, they are selling it for the same price that it would be if you were going to a store in Portland, which is amazing. Because, as you know, if you're in, like, Atlanta, down at Hartsville Jackson, ATL, and you want to get, like, a quarter pounder with cheese, it's like $8.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so the PDX airport is great for that. So Aiden got something to eat. I wasn't that hungry, so I just went and found a bottle of tea. And I'm sitting, waiting for the flight to board. People are already kind of starting to line up, but, you know, I fly cheap. So I've got the bottle on the armrest, and it falls. And you know how airport seats are? They're like, you know, the joined seats. So it falls behind towards where people are getting on the plane. And so I reach to get it, and I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to walk around this entire thing and go get my tea. So I'm like reaching. I'm doing the laziest thing I've done in quite some time. And so I'm reaching and I'm reaching and I can't reach it and I try to move my arm. And so some guy in line finally is like I feel like he's going, oh my God, this guy in his Zubaz at the airport. Some guy like reaches and gives it to me. And I look up and I say, thank you. And halfway through saying thank you, I realize that I'm looking up at the $1 million man, Ted DiBiase. Matt, Aiden was watching my face while I was recognizing Ted DiBiase. Like, according to her, a change came over me. And I know a change came over me because I didn't know what to do. I had already taken the tea. I stood up and I said, it's a pleasure to meet you, sir. Because what do you do when, like, I wasn't expecting to see Ted DiBiase. And the funny thing is, I told Aiden on the way out when we were flying out, because we flew through Atlanta. And I was like, yeah, you know, every other time I've flown through Atlanta, I always look for Dusty Rhodes. But now I can't do that anymore. Like, whenever I'm in the Charlotte airport, which is pretty frequent, I always look for Ric Flair. And whenever I'm in the Atlanta airport, I always look for Dusty Rhodes. I've only ever seen a wrestler in an airport once. I was on a moving sidewalk behind Eric Rowan, and he was very much in a hurry to get somewhere. So I did not stop him. But those are the airports where I expect to see wrestlers. I did not expect to see anybody in PDX. So I'm just like, yep, there's the $1 million man. And here's the funniest thing. He was wearing a WWE polo shirt.
Does Ted DiBiase live in Oregon?
I have no... I mean, maybe he was just out visiting, too. They've got great restaurants.
I didn't hear where it was that you actually saw him. I assumed it was the Atlanta airport.
No, this was... He was on my plane from Portland to Atlanta. And, like I said, I didn't know what to do. I told Aiden, like, I was like, hey, when we get on this plane, if that dude's not flying first class, I'm going to cry. It's going to break my heart. Matt, that dude was flying first class.
Oh, good. That's good. This is better than my Hulk Hogan was on my flight to San Diego story by a mile. So, good on you.
And the thing is, like, If anyone would have handed me that bottle of tea, I would have been like, oh, thanks. And then that would have been the end of it. I would not have dwelled on what a lazy slob I was. Not only am I like, I can't reach my tea. Like, not only do I have that, it's like, oh, Ted DiBiase saw me do that.
Well, at least he didn't toss it in the trash and cackle at you, which is what the Million Dollar Man would have done.
Wouldn't it have been better if he did, though?
It probably would have, yeah.
I hope Ted DiBiase is somewhere going like, yeah, there was this weirdo at the airport, and I handed him his tea, and he stood up and thanked me. So, Matt, your check and rec this week.
I'm going to make mine quick. My check is what is now my regular check segment, because it's all I've been doing and all I will be doing for a while. It's book update. It's where I am in writing my newest book, which is due in October. I'm luckily fairly ahead of schedule. My current word count is 25,692. That means I am about somewhere in the ballpark of a third of the way done. I finished 5 of 16 chapters. So things are coming along on that. Hopefully there will be a book for people to read in the future. My rec is a game that you can get for your iPhone. These have been my recs a lot lately. But this one was really fun. I've kind of exhausted it now because there's only a certain number of levels that you can play. There's a daily level, but I didn't really want to hang on to it to keep doing the daily levels. But while it was continuing to go, it was really fun. It's called Word Whizzle. And it's kind of a word find game, but it doesn't work like a regular word find. There's a grid of letters, like a regular word find, but the words are not in straight lines, like diagonal or up and down or side to side. They kind of curl around or go, they just, the adjoining squares within a word touch. So you have to find a certain number of words in the grid to finish the level. And all the letters within the grid make the words that you have to finish. And they give you a clue at the top of the screen that's a theme for all the words that are in the grid. So it's kind of sort of a crossword, sort of a word find, and then its own thing all at the same time. And it's a nice little just kind of keep your brain busy word game that you can play on your phone. I had a lot of fun with it, and was kind of really hooked on it for a few weeks. So Word Whizzle, it is a fun little iPhone game, possibly also available on Android. I am not sure. All right, I made my checks and recs quick, Chris, so we can move on to talking about some comics. All right, Chris, let's get started with, we reviewed number 50, but I feel like our duty to talk about Batman number 51.
A sacred trust.
This is the last issue of the Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo run on this book, and it is a really great period to the series because in a run that has been characterized by these big stories that sort of take Batman out of his element a little bit, this is the most kind of like, I guess, prototypical, archetypical Batman story that you could imagine. There's a bat signal. He goes and answers the bat signal. There's a long-ish Batcave scene with him and Alfred sort of, you know, having banter. He encounters a bunch of villains at Arkham Asylum and has a little stare down with them. But it's all that sort of turned on its head a little bit. It's really well done, I thought.
I love the idea of short Batman stories. I feel like a lot of Batman stories can work with a simplicity that you don't often see in modern comics, because there's nobody really out there doing a lot of done-in-one stories. You know, and for Batman, you know, in italics, the title, there's an obvious reason for that. Like, it's the superhero book, so you want these big superhero stories. And that's what Snyder and Capullo have been doing for almost 5 years. Like, they've been going bigger and bigger with each story and telling these, you know, 12-part stories, 9-part stories, 7-part stories, and it's been super huge. You know, we talked to Scott on Ajax 300. And one of the things that he mentioned was that, you know, he's a short story writer at heart. And I've been waiting to see him do that forever. Like, I've been waiting to see him do that short Batman story. And I think this was the best way for him to do it. Because, like you said, it serves as the end of the run. And because of that, he's able to do a short Batman story that also touches on everything else he's done. Like, it touches, you know, the first thing that happens in that story is that there's a breakout at Arkham Asylum, right? And that's the first thing he does in Batman number one. Like, the first thing that Snyder and Capullo do in Batman number one is they kind of go and do all the old villains, like, at once, and shove them back into Arkham. You know, you see the Court of Owls, you see the Joker in his non-Jokerized form sitting at that foul pond that they have. And it's something that I thought was a really appropriate touch, and something that I thought was a really welcome touch, to kind of do all that and also subvert all these expectations that not only the readers have, but that Batman himself has. That, I think, was my favorite part of the issue. Is the part where Batman goes, yeah. You know, when Alfred goes, maybe it's, you know, maybe this earthquake is natural. And Batman goes, yeah, it's Gotham City. It's never natural. And then that kind of turns out to be what it is.
Yeah.
And so you get a tour of Gotham City under Batman.
And it's not that this run has been outside of Gotham City per se, but it's really done a lot to try to reach outside of kind of the confines of what you would call your typical Batman story, you know? Mm-hmm. And this single issue kind of brings it back to that. And in doing so, it's really good. And like you said, the twist of it is that it's sort of not only upends the reader's expectation of Batman, but upends Batman's expectation of the city and his own setting, which is really cool.
Batman's expectation of Gotham.
That's right.
Really, really fun stuff. Like, I honestly thought this was going to be a story, and I mentioned it, if you go read the Weekly Picks column at Comics Alliance, the best comics ever this week, I talked about how, you know, the solicitation said, like, oh, it's a quiet night for Batman. And I was expecting something more like The Night of Thanks But No Thanks, that Harlan Ellison story where, you know, everything's actually going right for once in Gotham City and Batman gets really frustrated because there's no crime to fight. But that wasn't what it was. And instead what we got is this great little coda to, you know, what I still think is probably the best run of the New 52.
And it's the only one that I think went for this many issues, went basically until Rebirth. Has there been anybody else on a book from the start of the New 52? I don't think so.
There hasn't been a team. It really comes down to Snyder, Capullo, and then Johns on Justice League. He's worked with, obviously, with multiple artists.
Yeah, I guess that one does count. But yeah, aside from those two, you know, books have shifted creative teams and directions. Batman has been consistent, just so consistently good. The next comic that I wanted to talk about is a new series from Black Mask Comics called Four Kids Walk Into a Bank, written by Matthew Rosenberg and with art by Tyler Boss. I really enjoyed this comic book. Someone tweeted to me the other day, and my apologies for not remembering who it was, and I can't dig through my tweets to find out who it was. But they said that this comic was absolutely up my alley and reminded them to a degree of Superior Foes of Spider-Man. And that is a very accurate comparison. The book has a very kind of similar comedic tone to Superior Foes of Spider-Man. But there's kind of a Runaways thing built into it too. It even kind of starts and ends like the first issue of Runaways did, because it starts with not a video game, but with the lead characters, the four kids playing a D&D game. And we see the fictional world of the D&D game and how they act in that before we see how they really act. And then there's a twist. There's a last page twist that kind of reminds me of what happened in Runaways as well. So it's got kind of both of those elements. It's sort of a mix of those two kinds of books, because there's a lot of comedic stuff in here, a lot of really well done sort of physical comedy on a comic page, which I'm a real sucker for. What Tyler Boss does just with like character expressions, the way their body language is, the way that you get a sense of movement in a static panel is so well done. There's one scene where the kids are all talking to each other on a CB radio, and it's just a series of a very small talking head panels where they're talking to each other on the CB radio. But the dialogue really pops and the expressions are so good that you can get through that sequence and laugh and really enjoy it. And it doesn't just feel like a bunch of talking heads. There are a couple places in the writing where I feel like cliche maybe pops up, like the kid who is like the annoying kid of the four is a little Eric Cartman-y. He's kind of got that sense to him. He curses a lot. His mom calls him by his last name. He's sort of got maybe one too many Eric Cartman traits, but I'd say that's a minor gripe. For the most part, it is a really enjoyable book. I believe it is. I mean, I might be totally wrong about this, but I believe it is the first published work, at least that I'm aware of both of these creators. So it is really good, really funny, great art, and you should check it out. I grabbed it on Comixology. It's there. You can pick it up, and I'll be reading the rest of the series because it is very fun.
I know I've heard of Tyler Boss before, so okay. Maybe I heard of this book. Like I'm not super familiar with the title, but I think I've heard of it, and I have heard very good things. So
I liked it a bunch. I think Tyler Boss may have done some of his own self-published comics, just looking at his website. But yeah, this series is very good, and you should check it out. Real quick, I want to talk one second more about, I guess, an issue from the other series that has been consistent throughout the New 52, Justice League. Justice League number 49. Chris, did you know that the Darkseid War is still going on?
I did know that, but I only knew that because the Darkseid War will culminate in us finding the Joker's true name. So yeah,
that's coming in the next issue. This issue just felt like these events happening with no rhyme or reason and with no connection to one another. And they all take place on this one battlefield where Darkseid has died. Lex Luthor has taken Darkseid's power. There's just a lot of characters kind of standing around watching as Lex Luthor is trying to defeat the Anti-Monitor. They're kind of evenly matched. But there's this weird story with Superwoman going on where she's going to have a baby. There's really weird...
Like Earth 3 Superwoman?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a bunch of weird stuff with Batman having the Mobius chair. There's Superman giving up his like cosmic power because it's making his body deteriorate, which I think ties into the last days of Superman thing that's going on in his books. And one thing that has been really weird about this whole Darkseid War story is that every time a new big bad guy seems to step up, that big bad guy dies. And it happens again this issue. It's so fucking weird.
I mean, one of the things that we've kind of commented on about Justice League in the past is that I'm not sure if Justice League is the book where I want to see Lex Luthor fight the Anti-Monitor. I mean, I'm not sure if there is a book where I want to see Lex Luthor fight the Anti-Monitor, if we're being totally honest with each other. But, like, it seems weird. But, you know, I haven't read, like, 8 of the 9 parts of Darkseid War, so.
And Darkseid War has continually been more and more people teaming up with the Justice League, even if they're bad guys, to fight the Anti-Monitor, even though there's some dissension among the ranks with the crime syndicate this time, this issue. But it's sort of like Justice League teamed up with Lex Luthor, who was already on the Justice League, teamed up with the crime syndicate because they all want to take down Darkseid. And then members of the Justice League have either like cosmic Anti-Monitor powers or some kind of apocalypse powers. It feels like it should be like Darkseid War should be some kind of miniseries, like an event comic. Mm-hmm. But it feels like every Justice League story arc has been that way. Like they've all had that kind of weird event comic feel instead of feeling like an arc in a series.
Okay, I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, I think post Giffen to Mattias, if you're gonna do the Justice League, that's the big Justice League, then that's what it should be. Like every story should feel like an event. That's what the Morrison run was. But I feel like my problem with this has been that we've gotten like two stories about the Justice League fighting supervillains, and then the rest of the last 5 years has been the Justice League either fighting each other. You know, they fought Aquaman, then they fought amongst themselves for a little bit, and then the bad guys showed up and fought other bad guys. And we've just fight the Royal Flush Gang. give me an issue where they fight Amazo.
That's what I mean when I mean event comic. I don't necessarily mean it's a big story.
Right.
I mean it's got a focus that goes way beyond the title team, you know? Mm-hmm. Like it's some kind of big team up, or it's some kind of thing where the normal dynamics of superheroes and supervillains get shifted around. Mm-hmm. And boy, you can't do that all the time.
Yeah, because I feel like then it becomes the Justice League did not establish a baseline. And I think the argument for that is that, you know, in the 5 year gap between the first arc and the second arc, that was when the Justice League was the Justice League, and they fought, you know, they fought Amazo, and they fought the Royal Flush Gang, and they fought, I don't know, Solaris, the tyrant son. Like, but we never got to see all that, so a baseline for this Justice League was never really set. But, you know, at the same time, like, I'm making that complaint as though I have not read 100 Justice League stories in the past. Like, I know what it looks like when the Justice League does a Justice League story. I am making that complaint as someone who it nominally should not apply to. And I guess, you know, your question would have to be, and honestly, this is my question, because it's been 5 years. If you're out there and you were someone who got into comics with the New 52, because at this point, it's possible that someone's out there who did that. Let me know what you think. Like, I'm genuinely curious. This is not me, like, baiting anybody to make fun of them. I'm genuinely curious, like, did you get into Justice League with Justice League number one and read it all the way through? I think that would be an interesting thing to hear about.
I think it's time to end the comic segment and get into our panel president segment. But first, Chris, let's talk a little bit about Loot Crate.
We've highlighted some aspects of Loot Crate in the past. We've talked about how it's not just stuff that's laying around. It's premium items. It's custom items.
It's exclusive stuff that you can only get through Loot Crate. The May Loot Crate has not been revealed yet.
Ooh, unrevealed.
But every Loot Crate has a theme. You can go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and you can see what other Loot Crates have been over the past few months. You can see if the stuff in there is the kind of stuff that you like. If that looks like the kind of stuff that you'd be into, every box comes with a t-shirt. Every box comes with guaranteed cool stuff of value that you're going to like based on stuff that you like. Then absolutely sign up for that account and get a cool Loot Crate box every month. I've heard people say that it's like a friend packing up a box of stuff for you every single month and sending it to you as a gift.
You can pretend it's us sending it to you.
You could.
Like, okay, Matt, what I want to do right now, let's take a moment and then we'll record like a greeting that people can play every time they get a Loot Crate in the mail. So like when you get your Loot Crate out of your mailbox and you bring it inside, I want you to go over to your computer. You can like use GarageBand, use Audacity, cut this part out, me and Matt are gonna act like we're giving you a present. Okay, Matt, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm just gonna say like friend and buddy, so we don't have to know people's names. If your name is Buddy, that's great. But here we go. Ready?
Ready.
Hey, buddy. Look, we saw some cool stuff we thought you'd be interested in, so we filled up this box with it.
Yeah, we thought you'd like all this stuff. There's a t-shirt in here. There's some other cool stuff.
There's some exclusives in there, too. Like, it's stuff you're not going to find anywhere else, and we thought it would be cool. We were like, oh, what is our cool buddy like? It's all this stuff.
Enjoy. We got you this stuff to enjoy. Be happy for once.
Oh, wow, that t-shirt is going to look great on you.
So just remember, when you open up this box and you get the cool stuff inside, remember that your old buddy Matt, a.k.a. Luke.
And your old pal Chris.
A.k.a. Crate. We gave you this stuff. Go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and use the offer code WarRocketAjax to get $3 off. And then use that audio to feel like a friend is sending you the stuff every time you get one. This is Panel President, the segment where listeners send us lists of comic book characters, and then we place those characters in our list of the best comic book characters of all time, ranked all the way down to the worst comic book characters of all time.
That's right, Matt. Currently, the list has 57 entrants. Coming in at number one, we have Spider-Man, Peter Parker, and at number 57, at the bottom of the list, Hemogoblin.
Yep, the less said about him, the better. Before we get into ranking our lists, though, I do want to make one quick housekeeping note. You were probably wondering where the Every Story Ever special for April is, because this is May 2nd. We have not recorded it yet for reasons that you have heard earlier in the show, but we are getting to it. We are definitely going to do it, and we'll do two in May is basically the way it's going to happen. So sorry that we didn't get it done in April. But we will be doing that Every Story Ever special as soon as we can and getting it up as soon as we can. So do not fret. You will be getting your Every Story Ever special very soon. Now back to our other list-based segment, Panel President. This list comes from Robert Kelly.
Wow.
Senator Kelly?
Wow. I know I say it every time.
This list is not X-Men related. This is a list of his favorite Teen Titans.
Okay.
Now, number one is someone we've already ranked. That is Superboy, a.k.a. Connor Kent.
A.k.a. Kal-El.
That's right. So we're going to be moving on to the next one on his list, who is Starfire. Coriander.
Talking about Coriander of Tamaran.
That's right.
I'm not a huge Starfire fan. Not a huge Titans fan is the problem.
Yeah, there are versions of Starfire I really like. The one who appeared in the Teen Titans cartoon.
Yes, and the one who appeared in the other Teen Titans cartoon.
That's right.
It does it. That's it.
And the one who is currently in DC Comics, or has recently been in DC Comics.
That's right. I remember you... You said you were quite a fan of the new Starfire series, which I have not read yet.
Well, she feels like that Teen Titans version of Starfire. The problem is that comic Starfire was not that for 30 years.
Yeah, but I will say, I'm not a Titans fan. I've written about that. Like, whatever appeals to people about new Teen Titans, I find completely... In X-Men, and weirdly enough, like at the time when a lot of people would have gotten into Teen Titans, at the age, I should say, because it was after the time, I was getting into like Gen 13. Like, I will always love Gen 13 as much as people who love New Teen Titans because they were 13 in the early 80s love that. Starfire is a good concept. I don't necessarily like comics Starfire in practice all the time, but I do like the idea of the you know, alien princess, you know, who's got a little bit of she's got a little bit of space Conan in her, you know. She's kind of a barbarian queen from space, but as a also like sweet, kind princess. I like the idea of someone with that origin story coming to Earth and then having to deal with, you know, evil sister and all the cool space stuff. I think that, like, that to me is way better and way more appealing in a very DC Universe way than, say, comics Raven, who has all the Trigon and devil stuff, you know, very, very similar in tone to, oh, you know, I have an evil family that's going to come and get me in one form or another. Like, I think Starfire pulls that off better.
I think Starfire walks an interesting line. She can go from being sweet and innocent to being too naive.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like a character who doesn't know anything at all, so a writer can, like, have her agree to anything, or like the Starfire at the start of New 52.
That's bad.
Kind of characterization where her alienness, her unawareness of human culture and sort of the seedy underbelly of humanity makes her malleable in uninteresting ways and kind of skeevy ways.
It does. But I feel like Starfire is at her best when she's reverse John Carter.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when she's the alien barbarian queen who has to come to Earth and deal with Earth stuff, and that's her out of her element. The problem is, I don't think we never see her story from her perspective. And I think that hurts her as a character, because we always see it from the perspective of, you know, us as Earth humans, and Starfire kind of coming to us as an outsider. Like, I don't know how much of that is addressed in the new series, but I like the idea of her, like, if we could get to see that from her perspective, as she's, you know, she's the one who has to escape to Earth, and Earth is weird and full of superheroes, and I feel like that would make me like her as a character a lot more. I don't know.
All right, let's rank Starfire.
Well, can I add one quick thing?
Sure.
Never bought her as a love interest for Robin, for Dick Grayson.
I think Oracle / Barbara Gordon is the better fit.
Yeah, that's my ship, bro.
That
is my ship. So I think that also holds back Starfire from me really getting behind her as a character in a lot of ways, because she's filling a lot of roles that I don't necessarily have an attachment to, unfortunately.
All right, here's where I'm looking on the list.
Okay.
In the arena of Chamber, M, Casanova, Quinn, Bad Rock.
I would say personally, I do not like her as much as any of those characters.
Okay, what about Gwen Stacy?
I think she has, if we were just talking about, you know, TV Starfire, yes, I would say put her above Chamber.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about comic Starfire, I would even put her like maybe above Namor for me.
So just above Namor?
Yeah, I would put her below Megatron, above Namor.
Weirdly comparable to Namor.
For us, yeah. And I think like Namor, like in the way that people got really mad about us about Namor's placement on this list, you and I not being New Teen Titans guys, I think is going to get a lot of people mad at us about wherever we put Starfire on the list. But yeah, that's exactly where I put her. Neither Namor nor Starfire is a bad character.
Not at all. Not at all. The next one here on Robert's list is Blue Beetle, the Jaime Reyes version.
Best teen superhero in DC Comics of the 2000s.
Yeah. I mean, I like the new version of the Atom, too.
I like Ryan Choi, but Ryan Choi wasn't a teenager.
Was he not? Okay.
No, he was a professor. He was a college professor. He was, like, young. He was, like, a prodigy, but, you know.
I don't guess it's a wide field of new teen superheroes in DC Comics in the 2000s. But Jaime Reyes is clearly the best of the bunch.
So great. And again, like super great on the Brave and the Bold cartoon as well. That lineup of characters on Brave and the Bold, that weird magical time where it has Ryan Choi as the Atom, Jaime Reyes as Blue Beetle, but also like old ass Wildcat is there.
Yeah.
And Huntress and Helena Bertinelli Huntress. Like what a great bunch of characters. That story where I think it's Eclipso. I think it's unfortunately the Jean Loring Eclipso, which is a whole other kettle of fish. Jean Loring as Eclipso, like, pulling out Jaime Reyes's future desire, like what he would do if he could do anything with his power. And he wants to be a dentist because dentists make good money and he can support his family. And that's his reasoning. She calls him out. She's like, you could, you know, if you had anything in the world, you'd be a dentist. And he's like, yeah, they, you know, they make a decent living. I love that. He is the prototypical good kid who gets superpowers. And I really love that about him.
Yeah. I mean, I think in every teen superhero story, you're sort of reaching for that Spider-Man origin.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Jaime Reyes is one of the characters that kind of gets the closest to catching that lightning in a bottle again.
Yeah, and I think he does it by avoiding the thing that defines Spider-Man, which is that Jaime Reyes doesn't have a motivating tragedy. The same reason I like Tim Drake. Jaime Reyes gets, you know, a power and decides that he needs to use it responsibly because he's a guy who likes superheroes.
Yeah.
And that's something that really comes to the forefront in the Brave and the Bold version, too, like where he's like a super fan. But yeah, I think he feels the most like you want Spider-Man to feel, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the only way to successfully pull off, you know, doing Spider-Man again is to not do it beat by beat.
Mm-hmm.
You got to change some stuff up. I feel like, you know, maybe the most comparable other character sort of the same time period is Invincible, who kind of does a Spider-Man thing but takes some different turns too. So I think in both cases, that's why it works. It sort of fits the Spider-Man template, but does some other things. And in the end, they're their own characters. Like Jaime Reyes is not Peter Parker, and that's why he works.
Yeah, definitely. Criminally underused character. Super glad that he's coming back for Rebirth. And I'm also really excited to see him interacting with Ted Kord in Rebirth. Like, oddly enough, I think that's going to be a really fun pairing. I'm looking at, like, I feel like the Black Cat Emma Frost area of the list right now. Because I don't think he has as much appeal to me as Jack Knight, because I'm old. Because I am in my 30s now. But I do feel like that is where I would put him.
I don't know that I would put him above either of those, Black Cat or Emma Frost, but maybe right under Emma Frost.
So you would say between Emma Frost and Miss Misery. Now that puts him above Steel and Hobbs the Tiger.
That's right. And one of our favorite teen heroes, Husk.
Yes, love Husk.
But, you know, Jaime Reyes is a great character executed really well. Well, bad choice of words maybe, but the stories with Jaime Reyes are all really well done. There aren't as many of them as we would like, but in some ways that's to his benefit because he hasn't had the trouble of, like, you know, that bad run or slumming, you know?
Mm-hmm. Jaime Reyes has that magic number of books where he never got to wear out his welcome and we never got to be used to him. But yeah. I think that's also the kind of, you know, again, tragically underused character. So yeah, I think entering the list at number 20 would be a good place for him.
Alrighty. The next one on Robert's list is Wonder Girl / Troia, Donna Troy.
You mean the reason we had Crisis?
Yep.
Not a fan.
Donna Troy is, she's a mess. She's Donna a Troy mess is of a character. Mess.
I remember, Donna Troy is a mess who doesn't have to be, but she always ends up being a mess.
I remember during Infinite Crisis, I believe it was during Infinite Crisis, each issue of like every DC book had a backup that explained the history of a certain character. And the one about Donna Troy was like a star chart, like impossible to decipher or read.
Okay, for those of you who don't know, Donna Troy was created because when Bob Haney and Nick Carty were sitting down to create the Teen Titans, they had Robin, they had Kid Flash, they had Speedy, and then they looked at Wonder Woman and saw Wonder Girl on the cover, and so they put Wonder Girl in it. The problem is, Wonder Girl is like Superboy. She's the Adventures of Wonder Woman when she was a girl.
Right.
So then they had to figure out who Wonder Girl was, and that's why we had Crisis on Infinite Earths. There have been no fewer than three stories titled Who is Wonder Girl or Who is Donna Troy over the course of her career. Three long stories, like big ones, where they try to really figure it out. And it's one of those things that seems like it should be simple. Like, oh yeah, she's Wonder Woman's little sister. But it always ends up being weird and kind of a mess. And then Terry Long shows up. And as we have previously established, Terry Long is maybe not the worst, but three spots above the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. I think the big problem with Donna Troy, aside from Terry Long, is that you can't do a Donna Troy story without it just becoming about her convoluted history anymore.
Yeah, she can't star in anything that doesn't immediately become, what's your deal?
Exactly.
And nobody has been able to kind of satisfactorily figure out her deal. Again, me and Matt, especially me, not new Teen Titans fans, but there are people out there who like Donna Troy, and the people who like Donna Troy the way I like Batman. Like, I don't think Donna Troy is the best character named Wonder Girl.
There you go. I mean, I don't think she goes, like, at the bottom.
No, she's not going to go, like, with Marcus.
No, and she's not going to even go with Terry Long.
No, she's, like, I mean, kind of the whole point of Donna Troy is that she's way better than Terry Long.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't put her above Adam X.
Would we put her above Carly Cooper?
I like Carly Cooper better.
All right, let's put her – what about the original Human Torch?
I like him better. He killed Hitler.
I mean, he did kill Hitler.
He did kill Hitler.
You want to put her between the original Human Torch and Fletcher Arrowsmith?
Yeah, I think that's a good place because Fletcher Arrowsmith is a character where he's a not memorable character in a very memorable story. And I don't think Donna Troy is an inherently bad character. But I do think she's a character where there have been a lot of attempts to explain her deal, and none of them have been particularly enjoyable for me to read.
Yeah, she's a character with unfortunate baggage.
I will say, she has had amazing costumes.
Yeah. Like
the black one with the Starfield on it, that costume fucking rules.
Yeah, they look great. It's just too bad that it's impossible to do like a fun, breezy story with her.
Yeah.
All right. The last one on Robert's list is Jericho. That is Joseph Wilson.
Did Robert say these were his favorite Teen Titans?
He said they were his favorite Teen Titans.
Oh, well, I'm excited about losing him as a listener. I think Jericho has legitimately one of the worst costumes in comic book history.
You know, like that purple vest with the belt cinching it that also
and the jewel and the poofy sleeves.
And that like leads to like cape clasps
and that fucking hair.
Yeah.
Jericho is my fourth favorite member of the Wilson family. And I, unless you're a member, in which case he's a distant sixth.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, he's the son of Deathstroke the Terminator. He can't talk because he had his vocal cords severed. But he does have the power to lock eyes with you and possess your body. Which, first of all, how do you get the name Jericho out of that?
I don't know.
They should rename him Y2J.
I mean, I guess it's like an ironic name because the walls of Jericho came down because of shouting and singing and playing instruments. And he can't talk.
I don't get him. Robert, I'm sorry. But I think a lot of this list is going to be like, yeah, do not get the appeal. I feel like if I don't like Deathstroke, and I kind of don't, I'm not going to like Jericho.
And he became one of those characters who, like, their whole deal after a while was just that they're fucked up. After his initial appearances in New Teen Titans, he just went bananas. And Deathstroke killed him.
But then he survived inside Deathstroke.
He jumped into Deathstroke's body and came back like a decade later. But he was still so like super mentally unstable. He's like if Proteus sucked.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it, Matt. Good call. I would say he goes for me like below Will Payton. Maybe below Cyborg Superman. Because I just read The Death and Return of Superman. So.
All right, we could put him between Cyborg Superman and Extraño.
Do you think that's a good place for him, or does he deserve to go above the Eradicator?
No.
Okay, there we go then.
All right, that is Robert's list. Robert, I hope we didn't upset you too much.
Yeah, sorry, Robert.
With our ranking.
Try again, buddy.
Our next list comes from ZS, Zach, Line Stepper. The first one on his list, he said these are some good, some bad, all right?
Okay.
The first one is The Flash, Barry Allen.
Oh, I got really excited for a second.
Because you thought it was Wally West.
I thought it was Wally West. I was like, oh yeah, I love The Flash. Oh wait, here's the thing. I don't hate Barry. I just love Wally. And I like Jay. And I like John Fox. And anyone else who has been Flash more than Barry Allen.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like Barry's fine.
He's just he's a glass of room temperature water, man.
But he's kind of not, too. Like, that's what I was going to say. Like, Barry Allen should be... Barry Allen should be our midpoint in the list, but also Barry Allen's actually better than that. Like, it's just that those stories are not my Flash stories, and they're what I would consider to be boring Flash stories. Here's my question for you, Matt. We're talking about Barry Allen.
Yeah.
So are we talking about Barry Allen 1954 to 1986? Are we talking about Barry Allen 2009 to 2016? Or are we talking about Barry Allen 1986 to 2009 when he was superpowered Uncle Ben and he was great?
Yeah, I mean, we have to take it all. We have to take it all. Because they're all Barry Allen.
That is true. That is true.
Like, when I say he's a glass of room temperature water, I mean pre-1986. Because after he returned... And, like, in the New 52 and on, they put a lot of Wally West in him.
They put so much Wally West in him, which is fine because that's the Flash who has personality. But it's not his personality.
We said he should be, like, the midpoint of our list.
Yeah, but I still think he might be better than that.
Yeah.
Because there ain't nothing wrong with Barry Allen.
It's true.
He's not a glass room temperature water, Matt. He's a Toyota Corolla. There ain't nothing wrong with him. He'll get you where you're going.
The way that I've the best description of a Toyota Corolla that I've ever heard is somebody describing it as, "Hey, cut me off one length of car."
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He is a superhero.
Yeah.
Like, he's gonna wave his arms real fast and make a tornado. He's gonna give you some fun Flash facts of dubious scientific merit. He's gonna accidentally give his nephew superpowers. He's gonna do everything you want to see a superhero do. And it's gonna be fine. Just like that Corolla is gonna get you to work.
Yeah. Okay, do we think he's better than Jack Knight?
No. That's way too high on the list.
But right below Jack Knight are Black Cat and Emma Frost?
Oh, I think Black Cat and Emma Frost are better than Barry Allen.
Okay.
I think we can agree he's better than Husk.
Yeah. Do you think he goes above Jaime Reyes?
I definitely don't think he goes above Jaime Reyes. But I think he probably goes above Steel, if only because we talked a lot about how much we like Steel and how much potential Steel had, but I don't know if Steel's potential was ever realized in the way that we wanted it to. Whereas Barry Allen, like, every bit of potential was realized, and he had the best death in comics.
You cannot deny that death scene.
Yeah. The best death in comics was undone, unfortunately. Yeah. And that kind of hurts him. But you can't say that, like, those 32 years that he was the Flash, he did not live up to that potential.
It kind of hurts him, but it also kind of helps him because it gave him a person. You know, he came back with a personality that he didn't have before. If we're putting him above Steel, I think we should put him above Hobbs too.
That's real tough. Also, it's hilarious that Miss Misery is better than Barry Allen, but I also agree with it.
Miss Misery is a great concept.
Great concept. Genius. I think Hobbs is more entertaining to me than Barry Allen. I will say that.
Okay. Okay, if we want to put him between Hobbs and Steel, then so be it.
I think Hobbs the Tiger edges out Barry Allen.
All right. So be it. The next one on Zach's list is Plastic Man, Patrick O'Brien.
Talk about Eel O'Brien? Talk about Patrick Eel O'Brien? I just made air quotes.
Plastic Man's fun.
Plastic Man's great. How much Golden Age Plastic Man have you read, Matt?
I haven't read a ton of Plastic Man Golden Age. I've read the Kyle Baker Plastic Man series.
Which was amazing.
And I've read Plastic Man's appearances in JLA.
Also amazing.
And that's kind of it for me with Plastic Man, to be honest.
Okay. If there's one Golden Age comic I would recommend unreservedly to you, Matt Wilson, it would be the Golden Age Plastic Man. You should absolutely go back and read those stories. Because you, being someone who likes, you know, goofy detective stories, like detective stories with a twist, and also comics that do physical comedy, you will be amazed at how good Jack Colt was at both of those things.
There are comics that
you read that feel like they are from the future. And Plastic Man reads like a comic from the 60s. Like the police comic stuff, it reads like it's a comic from the 60s. Metamorpho reads like it's from the 80s. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, those stories are great, and Plastic Man is such a great character because no one else does what he does. Like, there's a lot of characters in comics who have that power because it's fun to draw stretchy arms, right? Like, it's a very visual power.
There's multiple DC Comics characters that do.
But, you know, Reed Richards ain't turning into stuff. Like, Reed Richards ain't turning into a baby carriage. Elongated Man isn't turning into an anvil and dropping on criminals.
Or a biplane.
Like, Plastic Man does that stuff. And it's goofy and cartoony, and it shouldn't work, and it's great. I love Plastic Man.
I love when Plastic Man gets thrown into DC Universe stories.
Yes.
And other characters have just have to live with the fact that this guy exists.
Plastic Man and Batman, like, if there's one thing that the Morrison Porter JLA did wrong, it was not having more Plastic Man and Batman interaction, because they were great together. They're the perfect foils, which I think is probably why Plastic Man was on Brave and the Bold so much. We're getting a lot of Brave and the Bold characters.
We are. All right, let's rank Plastic Man. Do we think he's better than Deadpool?
Without Plastic Man, there would be no Deadpool. I'll say that. I think Plastic Man's the Deadpool of the 40s.
That is very true. Plastic Man's the Deadpool of the 40s through Joe Kelly's run on Deadpool, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, he goes away for a little bit. Ironically, Joe Kelly would later write, like, arguably the worst Plastic Man story of all time.
Weird that. Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, do we put him any higher than that, or do we put him directly above Deadpool?
They're very comparable. Plastic Man and Dracula, who is currently above Deadpool, less comparable.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you could argue that Deadpool is a better character than Plastic Man. But I feel like if any two characters are going to fit, like, right on the same level, it's those two. And I would give Plastic Man the edge just because of how forward-thinking those stories were in the 40s.
Yeah,
I mean, I would say he's not as good as Dracula.
Okay. I think if you're going to say there's a forerunner for comedic superhero comics, that's got to be it, right? That's got to be the progenitor. The next one on Zach's list is Dr. Dinosaur from Atomic Robo.
I do like that guy.
A good villain.
I mean, like, that long pause is because his name is Dr. Dinosaur, and that's exactly what he is.
Yeah, like, I mean, what
discussion do we need?
There's not a ton else to say about it.
I love Dr. Dinosaur being kind of dumb.
Sure. I mean, every villain has to be kind of dumb.
Yeah, but Dr. Dinosaur is, like, especially dumb, but in a very clever way.
Yeah.
I think if you want to see how talented Clevenger is as a writer, and also how talented Scott Wigner is as an artist, like, look no further than any of the Dr. Dinosaur stories. Like, and also, they stumbled upon the perfect Free Comic Book Day character, because you don't need to know anything else about him other than, oh, hey, this is Dr. Dinosaur. He hates Atomic Robo.
Yeah, I mean, he could show up in any story anywhere without having to, you know, have a 20 text boxes of what this guy's deal is.
So
you know
in that regard, he's the opposite of Donna Troy.
Yeah, that's very true.
I would say Dr. Dinosaur, definitely above Barry Allen.
Okay, definitely above Barry Allen. But above Hobbs? Above Miss Misery?
I would say maybe right above Miss Misery. Right below Blue Beetle, so entering the list at number 22.
All right, that's where we'll put him. Next on Zach's list is one that we might have some trouble with.
Okay.
This one's tough. It's Harley Quinn.
Man, if you want to talk about a great idea.
A great character that has deteriorated so drastically over time.
A great idea, a great design. Like I mean, if we're, you know, going to the animated series, so great voice, like perfect voice acting, because the character is partially based on the voice actress.
Yeah. But the thing is, we can't count the animated series.
We can.
We can't. These are only characters based on their appearances in comics.
Well, Harley Quinn started appearing in comics in Batman Adventures number 8, Matt.
We can count Batman Adventures, but okay. We can't count Batman the Animated Series.
Okay. All right. Fine. Just like we didn't count the animated series for Starfire. I get what you're talking about. I get where you're going.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn is brilliant. In concept, because she's the Joker's Robin, which is something that they tried to do once or twice before, like in the Silver Age. He had. Do you know about Gaggy Gagsworthy?
Yeah,
Gaggy Gagsworthy would not do well on this list, but he was the Joker's sidekick for a little bit,
right?
For one issue, and then I think he made like 3 appearances total, including one in Gotham City Sirens, where he came back to get revenge on Harley Quinn for ablazing him. Very smart story, by the way. Or very smart concept, at least. Bruce Wayne saves Dick Grayson, right? Like, he saves him. Every alternate universe where Batman doesn't exist, they make a point of showing that Dick Grayson is dead. Because he tried to go off and get revenge on his own.
Right.
So, Batman saves Dick Grayson. In a very fatherly sort of way. Joker damns Harley Quinn in a very predatory way. In a way that I think makes it very easy to ruin her as a character. But like in its original form, like again, you know, Mad Love was a comic, so we can talk about Mad Love. Like that is a really... That's a great origin story because the level of manipulation in play works really well because it makes Harley a pawn, but it doesn't rob her of her humanity, which I think is the biggest problem of later interpretations of Harley Quinn, like the New 52 Harley Quinn, is that she has been robbed of all her humanity and is much more difficult to sympathize with.
She went from being a character to being a mascot.
Yeah, I think that like that's exactly it. I think that's a good way to put it. It's hard to imagine the episodes of the animated series where you see Batman sympathizing with Harley Quinn, or the way you see Batman sympathizing with Harley Quinn in Mad Love, even. To do that with the character as she exists now in the DC Universe, who killed a bunch of children on panel.
Yeah.
Like, that's really difficult. I feel like it comes from changes that were made to her origin. Because that original origin, Harley's manipulated. Harley is lied to. Harley is, you know, very obviously, like, used. But also, Harley decides to become Harley Quinn. Like, she decides to go put on face paint and a costume and break the Joker out of jail. Which I think is a small, but it, you know, it's something that she's manipulated into, but it is a choice that she makes, because of something that's not a flaw in her character. Like Harley being trusting is not presented as a flaw. All of her qualities that make her someone the Joker can manipulate are never presented in Mad Love as flaws because they are admirable qualities. She's sympathetic. She's empathetic. She is trusting. The problem entirely lies with the Joker. Like, the only thing that Harley does badly, like, the only indication that, you know, she's not a 100% good person is that she wants to get famous by writing a book about the Joker when she gets her job at Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Like, she's not in it for the love of curing mass murderers. Which I don't think, you know, is the kind of flaw that killing a bunch of people is.
Yeah, it's different levels. This is why I say we were going to have some difficulty with ranking Harley Quinn, because if we could split her into character Harley Quinn and mascot Harley Quinn, character Harley Quinn would rank really high, and mascot mm-hmm. Harley Quinn would probably rank pretty low. We have to take that all together.
It's not entirely a problem with Harley Quinn as a character, because it's also a problem with the Joker as a character. You can have someone falling in, you know, you can have an otherwise, maybe not entirely reasonable and rational, but a person who's, you can be manipulated into falling in love with animated series Joker. You cannot be manipulated into falling in love with terrifying comics Joker, like mass murderer Joker.
Yeah.
Like, Batman the Animated Series / Batman Adventures Joker hasn't killed a million people. Comics Joker has killed a million people, if he's killed one.
Right.
Comics Joker runs around with his face cut off sometimes. It's like, it makes him, it drags, you know, when you change the Joker, you drag everything else down a little bit. Like, and so you get all these problems with the Joker. Like, you know, hey, why doesn't Batman kill the Joker? Well, because, you know, he used to be a bank robber. Like, he used to want to kill one guy and, you know, occasionally killed two or three in stories like Five-Way Revenge. Now he's a monster. And so yeah. Harley Quinn has to be reshaped to fit that in a way that I think doesn't work. Like, I fundamentally think it doesn't work. But I like her as a character.
All right, let's try to...
Because I like your stuff.
Let's try to rectify this. Let's try to bring this all together and rank Harley Quinn.
It's tough. It's really tough.
It's very tough, yeah.
This is one of the hardest ones we've ever gotten.
I mean, I feel like we did the same thing with Superboy, where we kind of took the good with the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think she goes in the area of Superboy, or do you think she goes higher?
It's real tough, Matt. It's really, really tough. Because there's good stuff, and there's potential. And I feel like we're – like, because, look, Harley Quinn's not going anywhere. No. Harley Quinn's a hugely successful, hugely beloved character.
And she's about to be in a huge movie.
She's about to be in a movie.
Yeah.
In which she is the star. Like, I don't know if they're – if the movie will bear that out. But what is everybody excited about when they see those trailers? It's you know, they ain't super into Deadshot. Like, it's Harley that everybody is interested in. So Harley's not going anywhere. I think she it's tempting to say that they've broken her in a way that is irredeemable, but no character is irredeemably broken, I don't think. Well, maybe a couple. But I think we're in a period now that we will look back on as a low point in Harley's existence. So I think, you know, we've got highs and lows with Super Bowl that we don't necessarily have the other side of the high point for with Harley Quinn. But again, I think you're right. I think that's a good place to rank her. Like, concept wise, I think she's better than Prometheus.
Yeah.
I think she's maybe, like, I think maybe between Prometheus and Ted Knight.
I am good with that.
And, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years, 6 years ago, she'd be like 20 places higher on this list.
Oh, yeah. She'd be above Black Cat for sure.
Yeah. So Harley Quinn enters the list at number 34.
All right. And the last one here on Zach's list is Reed Richards.
Ooh, that is a controversial one.
Yeah, again, you got to take some good with some bad. Hickman Reed Richards is a fascinating character, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so much of Reed's past, he's just a dick. So much of Reed Richards has just been him being a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, even Stan and Jack's Reed, you know, action scientist Reed, is a little bit of a jerk.
I mean, that's the same one that told Sue that women should be seen and not heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even like up to, you know, not Wade's run, that version of Reed Richards is also really good in the Wade run. But up to that point when like Chris Claremont was doing Fantastic Four,
mm-hmm.
Reed ignoring his family at the expense of doing science was like one of his main character traits.
It's very hard to write a character who gets wrapped up in things without doing that, without, like, especially when he's the core idea of the Fantastic Four is that they're a family, but you know, Reed gets caught up in things and you know, is busy doing science, like almost always, because it's a book about a family of superheroes, always ends up with him being a, like, neglecting his family in one form or another, which sucks. Like, it's his curse as a character. Reed's real good, though. When you get a creator who can hit that balance, and Wade's one of them, Simonson is one of them, Walt Simonson, in that run on Fantastic Four, Hickman, I think. Like, when you get someone who can hit that balance, and also Stan and Jack, because Reed in the Lee Kirby run has problems, but guess what? Characters in Lee Kirby runs have problems.
Yeah. I think Hickman does the best job of any, did the best job of anybody of trying to encompass all those parts
mm-hmm.
of Reed, where he can be a great dad and a great, you know, cornerstone of a family and a loving, caring, moral person, but he can also be a real bastard. And yeah. And that's sort of demonstrated in the Council of Reed Richards, you know, where mm-hmm. you see all these different aspects of Reed Richards exemplified in all these different versions of him.
The idea that his family is the only thing keeping Reed from being a full-on bastard is, I think, like, maybe the best thing that Hickman did on FF.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question for you, Matt. Is Reed Richards the worst member of the Fantastic Four? Because we know who the best is.
The best is Ben Grimm.
Second best is Sue.
I think Sue. Then I think Johnny, and then I think Reed. I think Johnny and Reed are close.
I would tend to prefer Reed to Johnny, but only because so many creators want to tell the same Johnny Storm story over and over.
Where he gets from being like a hot-headed kid to being mature. Yeah.
Yeah. And he does that so many times. But, you know, Reed does the same thing. Reed, like, almost every Fantastic Four run starts with Reed going, "Listen, Sue, I'm not going to ignore you anymore." And, you know, he, like, they all get reset. Like, but I think with Johnny, it shows more. I think Reed's probably number three, but he's a distant three. Like, Ben's great. Sue's great. Reed and Johnny have problems.
Yeah, I think they're close, Reed and Johnny. I don't know if I would – I kind of like Johnny Storm a little more. But it depends on the story. Like, certain stories, I'm like, oh, yeah, I actually love Reed Richards, the character.
Go read that issue. If you've never read the issue where Reed and Dr. Doom fight with time machine belts, and so they you have to read the issue twice because they fight through the issue – bouncing around through the issue in time, so there's a time order of Reed and Doom's fight, and there's also the order that you're reading it in the pages. It's a Simonson issue. Go fucking read that shit. Reed's great in that.
Alright, currently we have Ben Grimm the Thing at number 6, and we've established that he's the best member of the Fantastic Four.
Yes. So, who is the worst member of the Fantastic Four better than? The worst member of the Fantastic Four has got to be better than Namor.
Right? Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So Reed's better than Namor. So somewhere between number 6 and number 43 is where we're going to put him.
I think Reed still goes pretty high.
Reed's hard to like, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's a bad character.
He's a character with a lot of layers that makes him a really interesting character, which makes him a character that you can make really great stories about.
Yeah. Reed's biggest problem is that his code name is Mr. Fantastic, and when a guy is calling himself that, It's really, like, you know, you're kind of like, oh, this guy's a little bit of a jerk, isn't he?
I mean, Reed and Sue basically don't use their code names anymore anyway.
Dolph Ziggler would be a good Reed Richards.
That's a weird casting choice, but yeah, I could kind of see it.
Okay, so Reed's not better than Dracula.
Okay.
Reed's not better than... Reed's not better than Plastic Man.
Now that is quite... I mean, Plastic Man chronologically comes before Mr. Fantastic as a stretchy character.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people would say that Mr. Fantastic is the more prototypical stretchy character than Plastic Man. So that's a risky choice, but I think that's probably right.
Here's a question for you, Matt. You go into the comic book store. Oh, sorry, we're all out of Spider-Man, Matt. But we got two new number one issues. You can get Reed Richards number one or Plastic Man number one.
Oh, I'm buying Plastic Man in a heartbeat.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I say we put him between Dracula and Plastic Man, or between Plastic Man and Deadpool.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Because I do think he's better than Deadpool.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get in one last list. This is only three characters. Okay.
This should be easy.
We should be able to get through these pretty quick. This is from Connor Blake. The first one on his list is Lucy from The Wicked and the Divine.
Oh, I was hoping it was going to be Lucy from Peanuts, because I have thoughts.
I think I would put Lucy a lot higher than you. I love Lucy from Peanuts.
No, that's a great show. I love Lucy from Peanuts.
The follow-up to I Love Lucy that came before the Lucy show.
Okay, quick question. I'm way behind on WicDiv. Can we just do Lucy from Peanuts?
No. Somebody's got to send in the list.
Somebody send us Lucy Van Pelt next time. I am super behind on Wicked and Divine, and I don't feel like I can rank Lucy accurately.
Lucy, by the way, is Lucifer.
Yes.
You know, I'm also behind on Wicked and Divine, unfortunately. I really got to do a big catch-up on that story. Lucy is the character that is designed after David Bowie. I know that much.
Yeah, no, great look.
Great look.
Like, look, if we're just going off designs, Jamie McKelvey's going to have a lot of real good characters on this list.
Yeah. But I don't know that I don't know that we can adequately rank her at this point. Maybe we'll do a big Wicked and Divine catch up and come back and rank her.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to do.
The next one is Michelangelo of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay, so the best turtle.
I mean, your favorite turtle.
Who is your favorite turtle?
Raphael.
Of course. Explains so much.
I'm a rebel.
Mikey's the best. Mikey's great. The turtles are really good, but you could almost rank them as a unit. Like, even though they all have distinct characteristics, like, they are a character, almost.
They're four aspects of one personality.
Yeah, like, you know, you could literally rank all four Ninja Turtles as one character, because they, like, you never, you know, there are Ben Grimm solo stories. There are Wolverine solo stories. There are Robin solo stories. I can't think of any other group in comics that works only as a unit in the way that the Turtles do. And that's counting stories where Raphael's off on his own.
That's what I was about to say, though. That's why I think Raphael, when we eventually end up ranking all four of the Turtles, almost has to be the one on top, because he's the only one who can carry a story.
I don't think that's true. He's the only one who has... Like, traditionally, he's the turtle who stomps off and goes solo. But yeah, that's because he's Wolverine. You know, he's got to go cool off every now and then and team up with Casey Jones. Michelangelo is the heart of that book. And I'll tell you why. Because that book's ridiculous. That book's, like, dumb. Like, the concept of turtles, I mean, the book's not dumb. The book is great. But the concept of Ninja Turtles is dumb, and everybody knows it. It's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But in order for it to work, they have to treat it very seriously. They have to have Raphael, because Raphael's the one who's serious. They have to have Shredder be a scary guy, because he's a guy covered in knives who fights turtles, and that's ridiculous. So he has to be scary to make the story work and make the joke work. But Michelangelo is the one who's like, yeah, this is goofy. This is dumb. This is weird. And any other story, Michelangelo would ruin it because Michelangelo is the one who puts the lampshade on it, right? Like, Michelangelo is the one who's like, yeah, I'm going to break dance on my shell. Like, isn't this ridiculous? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles works because there is someone saying that. Because someone is there being the goofy guy, being the comedy guy, and allowing that book to be what it is, which is this great balance of goofy concept, serious execution, but not too serious. Like, we're not going to pretend like it's that serious. Even, and that allows that book to be as serious as you want it to be. That allows that book to make me cry when I read fucking City Fall, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Michelangelo's the best. He's great.
Michelangelo is a good character. You and I disagree about who the best turtle is, but he is a good character. Let's rank him. I mean, by virtue of the fact that he cannot come as anything but a member of a team, of a unit.
Yeah.
I think that's probably going to hurt him a little.
I mean, look, I don't necessarily want to read a Michelangelo solo series. I would, because those comics have been consistently great since IDW has been publishing them. But I don't, like, I want to see him as part of a team. You're right. I don't want to see him as a solo character over much.
Yeah, I think the only one that could do that is Raphael. Because, like, Donatello would just be doing experiments. Leonardo needs a team to lead. Raphael's the only one who can go do it. Okay.
Well, that's why you have the extended cast of other TMNT characters. But, like, this is a debate that we will get into later.
All right, where do you think Michelangelo goes?
I would say, okay, definite ceiling. I'm going to give you a definite ceiling.
All right.
Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle is not better than Marvel Comics Dracula.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That is an absolute for me. Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle is also not worse than Barry Allen.
I agree with that, too. I don't think that Michelangelo is better than Deadpool. Because Deadpool stands alone.
I think you're right. Although I do think, you know, you put a little Plastic Man, put a little Michelangelo in the blender, you get pretty close to Deadpool.
I mean, you're probably right. Right above Miss Misery?
Yeah, I think that's a good place for him.
Okay. Now, I'm making a prediction. Mm-hmm. I think all four Ninja Turtles are going to be ranked together.
Yeah, I think we're probably going to put all four Ninja Turtles right in those four spots.
Yeah. It's just going to be a matter of whether Raphael goes above or below.
Well, look, do you want to do that right now?
No, we can't because it's not on the list.
Okay.
But they have to come from a listener list.
All right, so Michelangelo enters the list at number 24 above Miss Misery, below Dr. Dinosaur.
The last one on Connor's list is Ultimate Spider-Man, Peter Parker. Not Miles Morales.
Okay, so we've got Spider-Man, Peter Parker on the list.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Ultimate Spider-Man is not as good as regular Spider-Man.
Not as good.
That hair.
That hair is...
hair bad.
Very weirdly of its time.
Very, very spring of 2000.
Yeah. I like that character.
I like him too.
But I don't think that Peter Parker is the best version of a character that comes out of Ultimate Spider-Man. I think Ultimate Spider-Man, if Ultimate Spider-Man does like favors for any characters, it's like Gwen Stacy and Aunt May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ultimate Aunt May is really good, actually.
Ultimate Aunt May is one of the best versions of Aunt May.
Yeah. And I think we say that as two people who like Aunt May more than most people like Spider-Man.
Well, it takes her out of the constantly in danger of dying mode that Aunt May is always in.
I feel like the worst thing about Spider-Man, like Lee Ditko, Lee Romita, like Spider-Man, which is an otherwise perfect run, is the Aunt May stuff. Like, Aunt May's going to die if she finds out I'm a hero. Like, Aunt May's not going to die, Peter.
Yeah,
she loves you.
Well, it's the thing about Aunt May that makes no sense is that why 16-year-old Spider-Man has an aunt that is his dad's brother's wife who is 90 years old.
who is, well, Matt, people were a lot older back in the 60s. She's probably like 45. but yeah, like, Ultimate MA, I think, is really good. Ultimate Spider-Man's just Spider-Man. Like, there's not a lot of significant changes to him.
I think the most telling thing about Ultimate Spider-Man is that outside of, you know, that initial run of Ultimate Spider-Man, which was pretty hot,
mm-hmm.
it took Peter Parker dying and a new guy taking over, Miles Morales, for that book to get any attention again.
And I think that, you know, I think the problem with that is inherent in that you can, and this is kind of a problem inherent in the entire Ultimate line. Like I don't like the Earth One books, but the Earth One books are like, you know, self-contained graphic novels that people who are curious can go into a bookstore and buy. And there's not necessarily going to be a lot of them. Like, we've got, what, 3 volumes of Superman and 2 of Batman, 1 each of Teen Titans and Wonder Woman. But the longer those things go on, the more you're going to have to, the more watered down they seem, in a way. By and large, I think the Ultimate line is vastly superior to the Earth One books, and I'm not just saying that because I'm currently working for Marvel Comics. I am on a record on those Earth One Superman and Batman books. But I feel like they accomplish the same goal. But, you know, once you get those first couple stories, once you see, like, oh, here's a new take on Spider-Man fighting this guy for the first time, and this guy for the first time, the longer it goes, kind of the less it's going to give.
Yeah, and I think another downfall of the Ultimate version of Spider-Man is that he has to tie into the Ultimates
mm-hmm.
in a way that 60s, you know, Ditko Lee Spider-Man didn't have to tie into the Avengers.
Yeah.
But by, like, the third or fourth story arc of Ultimate Spider-Man, he's working for Nick Fury.
I don't think that's a bad idea, because honestly, I think it's probably what we're going to see in the movies. I don't know, but, you know, he's working with Iron Man in that trailer.
I just feel like having that kind of safety net for Spider-Man takes something away from a character who can lose everything in a second, you know?
I mean, I think that is that's an interesting way to go with an alternate version of Spider-Man, because it's not like Peter Parker. You know, as we've always said, the most important thing about Peter Parker is that he's a teenager and he's called Spider-Man. And at DC, he would have been Spider-Lad.
Yeah.
You know, like, he decides that he's an adult when he's Spider-Man. And so, yeah, like, operating alone is a key factor of teenage Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe. I feel like when you're doing Ultimate Spider-Man, you can do things like that. And I think that makes him a little more fun to play around with. But I also feel like there's a weird sense of competition that you get with those characters. And that's why I feel like ultimately, no pun intended, like ultimately Miles Morales is going to end up being a better character, because even though he's named Spider-Man, even though he comes from that universe, he doesn't have to exist in Peter Parker's shadow as much as a character named Peter Parker does.
Yeah, exactly. And he can blaze his own trail and not have to work for Nick Fury. You know? Okay, here's what I'm thinking about Ultimate Spider-Man.
Okay.
I think he's going below Steel.
I think it's an interesting place for him. I'm gonna let you handle this one. You've read more Ultimate Spider-Man than I have, and I have a slight conflict of interest on this. So I'm gonna, whatever you want to go with, I'm good with.
I think he goes just below Steel. Because weirdly comparable. Like, Steel is an updating of Superman in a lot of ways. And Ultimate Spider-Man is very much, you know, absolutely an updating of Spider-Man. But Steel, John Henry Irons, has staying power in a way that this, like, different version of Peter Parker didn't.
Right, so Ultimate Spider-Man, Peter Parker, enters the list at number 29. That brings us up to 68 total characters.
There we go. And spoiler alert, Miles Morales is going to go above both of them. All right, that does it for this panel president special. Thank you to all the people who sent in lists that we got to do. This was fun. It's always fun. If you would like to send us a panel president list, you can send it to warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is our email address, where you can also send Every Story Ever lists, the Every Story Ever special for April, is coming in May. Watch out for it. You can send listener questions. You can send comments. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Be sure to also check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can download the show, stream the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Check out our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. That is another place where you can leave listener questions, and we will answer them. Check us out on iTunes. If you like the show, go to iTunes and leave us a review there. The more positive reviews we get on iTunes, the more we are featured, which is great. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. One place you can find my internet stuff is at about.me/MattDWilson. That is a place where you can find links to my Twitter, my Tumblr, and my books on Amazon. You can also go to Comixology and find my comic, Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective. 7 issues are available right there. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find me at about.me/ChrisSims. That'll send you to my Twitter, to my Tumblr. You can also check me out on Comixology. Just search for my name, and you can pull up a lot of the comics that I've written, including X-Men 92, the ongoing series from Marvel Comics. When you hear this, I think we're 2 days before number 3 comes out. So if you have been enjoying the story of Alpha Red and you know who showed up in the end of number 2, get ready for an origin story for the new villain. Get ready for all kinds of fun stuff in number 3 as we head towards the climax of the story in number 4. Do me a favor, pick it up, tell everybody you want it. tell your comic book store specifically, but anybody else you want to tell, that'd be great. Other than that, that's about it for me. You can also find me every day at Comics Alliance, of course, and right here every week on War Rocket Ajax. And the Movie Fighters podcast and the Sailor Business podcast, where Jordan D. White and I sit down with a friend each and every week and watch an episode of Sailor Moon. We did it! War Rocket Ajax number 302 is in the books, the panel president special. How do you feel? You feeling good?
Feel good about it. We ranked some characters.
We did rank some characters. Lucy Van Pelt coming next. Have a good one, everybody.
Yeah! Flash.
To help us keep the lights on and pay those chemics, they...
Ha, 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 ha.